what do you think happens now this offseason? How does this change the thinking of both the player and potential suitors if Kevin Durant does in fact have a torn Achilles?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I put a lot of calls in this morning just trying to canvas the league, and when the the update comes out within the hour, I guess, you know, there'll be an article up. But the consensus was that he'll have a max offer on the table from a team. If he does opt out of his $31 million contract, that team still see Durant as high value. Even if he has to possibly sit out a whole year, that you would still have him out 3 years left in the prime of his career. And I think the interesting thing will be what approach does the Golden State here take here? I mean, here's a player that's basically has saved this organization over $70 million the last 2 years. And is there a five-year, $220 million contract waiting for him, or does Kevin want to do something differently? Maybe, you know, we don't know what the lingering effects of this injury is going to be mentally for him. You know, maybe he will want a different change here. So I think there's still a lot in the air, but yeah, I mean, it's a little bit different than I think when DeMarcus Cousins injured his Achilles in New Orleans a year and a half ago, that the market is still really strong for Kevin Durant right now.
Well, I would say that if you're Kevin Durant, you're the greatest isolation scorer of all time, and you're still 31 years old or 30 years old as you're dealing with this injury. I'm not surprised, I guess, that there is that type of market for KD. I can't imagine that a fan base would be overly concerned about taking that risk. It feels like a decent one to make. The difficult decision or the difficulty of reading this situation is that if he wanted to secure himself best financially, clearly remaining with the Warriors would be the option. I'm guessing that the organization would feel some type of obligation to re-signing him, that they would be in the same camp as any other team where they would understand the upside play of getting Kevin healthy and getting him back with that group. They would probably be better suited to survive his injury than just about any other group. It's just, do you see a situation where Kevin Durant just, like, how he could go back to that medical team, how he could go back to that front office, how he could go back with those teammates? Like, do you feel as though those relationships would be severed?
No, I think that's something that's certainly worth talking about and debating. I think that's, yeah, I mean, if there is a course in action and that Durant wants to go to a team like the Knicks or Nets or, you know, even the Clippers here, I think that will probably be a deciding factor, because he will be leaving, $50 million on $60 million on the table by taking a $164 million contract compared to $221 in Golden State here. So, yeah, I mean, here's a guy that, you know, has been criticized because he, you know, we thought he would be back sooner. He comes back game five. And the reality of it is, I think Golden State did a little bit of a disservice when he got injured in the Houston series, where maybe you just say he's out indefinitely and don't put a timeline on it where he's day to day or he's going to be back and we're monitoring and he didn't practice. And you kind of just don't put the pressure on the player here. So yeah, if there is a decision that he goes elsewhere, then it will be probably because of maybe a lack of trust with the medical department, the front office there, and maybe he'll want a clean slate. I think the big thing too, guys, is that, you know, if he does sign a new contract with Golden State or somewhere else, you know, that contract's not insurable. So if Durant misses games 41 plus, they're not like they're going to get reimbursement here, and it's a huge number. I mean, I said it on Get Up this morning. It's like, it's not like it's $18 or $20 million anymore. It's like $38, $40, $42, $44, $46 million is a huge number. But that's, you know, that's the kind of cost of doing business right now.
I think your point about the way the Warriors handled it from the very beginning is a very salient one. And I think it's one that we're all looking back on now, especially given the severity of the injury and really questioning it. The idea that there were all these reports out there from the beginning that it was a mild calf strain and then, oh, just a little bit more significant. And then, hey, they could expect him back as early as game three and he's traveling to Toronto. It just, there really does feel like, if we're going to go back and look at this with hindsight, knowing how, you know, the risk that he was incurring for himself, that basically every step of the way, there was the perception being put out there that Kevin is close, that Kevin is going to be able to do this, that he should be able to make his way back. And it culminated with that game four where he doesn't play, and all of a sudden there are articles being written about whether if it was a different player, would he be out there? And there's a frustration level with his teammates as to what's going on with the injury. And then he suits up for game five after saying that he can't play in game four. Just like a couple of days earlier, he's testing out this injury. And when you were canvassing front offices and you were talking to people today, what was your sense of their feeling of the Warriors' culpability here? Because from an outsider standpoint, it seems quite severe.
That he probably shouldn't have been out there for game five, and that a calf injury could lead to an Achilles injury. Hey, I'm not a doctor, right? I mean, but come on. I mean, if you have a calf injury and you're laboring on that, I certainly think that could lead to an Achilles. And I think we saw that last night where a guy probably, if this was the regular season, would not be out there, but wanted to go out there in a game five down 3-1 and winds up blowing out his Achilles. And he's left a lot of money on the table, I said before, and he basically went out for the sacrifice of his, you know, of his teammates to try to, you know, get this series back to get back to Oakland here. So the other interesting thing too, guys, is like, you know, we're so heavily now involved in the whole gambling aspect of things, right? You know, the league has made, financial partners with casinos and online gambling is like, I wouldn't be surprised if like we get like the Kevin Durant rule, right? Where the gamesmanship of teams saying guys are questionable or, you know, the uncertainty of each game, that all goes out the window, and teams have to be a little bit more forefront as far as with their medical information, because there is so much, there's so much money on the line here.
Yeah, there is. And there's a lot of money on the line for Kevin Durant personally. 209 Sports at 59 The Fan, talking to Bobby Marks, ESPN front office insider. What did you think about the way the Warriors franchise handled it in the moment from a PR perspective, and Bob Myers getting up there and being very emotional? Of course, we had very little information at the time, but he divulged that it was an Achilles injury, just nobody knows how severe, but that he took the time in that moment. It's very, I think, bizarre to have a general manager speak to the media in the middle of a series like that. What did you think of that?
It was almost like they had lost the game, right? And it was kind of like, this is the end, and this is kind of where we are, and we're going to go our separate ways. And it wasn't like they had won the game. And I've known Bob Myers a long time. I knew him when he was an agent, and now certainly in Golden State. And I have a ton of respect for Bob, and he wore his emotions on his sleeve there. And I don't – hey, you know, we forget that these guys are like humans. I mean, like, we want to wind them up and put them on a court and have them all be the same and perform at a high level. But I think there is the human element to it. And I think when, you know, Bob's emotion showed you that, yes, there has been a wearing down, that the criticism of Durant, that he's misunderstood here throughout this series here, the injury that he was actually hurt, and this player went out there and sacrificed it, and they cleared him. So there's certainly going to be probably some heads to roll here, because we'll see what happens. This is a new medical staff. I mean, they've turned over the medical staff the last couple of years here. And, if he was cleared, then he was. But, you know, to put a guy out there that was injured, there'll probably be some, you know, culpability here. But as Bob said yesterday, I mean, he said, hey, we talked to our medical staff. He was cleared here. And it's when Kevin cleared it, and we made the best decision going forward. But yeah, I had no issues. It was, I don't want to say bizarre, but it was unique. I've never seen a general manager do that. But Bob, you know, hey, it was the moment. It was, you just lost a top two player for, who knows, for at least probably a year here.
Yeah, and he took some culpability. He said, if there's anyone to blame, if you want to blame anybody, you can blame me.
That felt hollow to me, though. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, so Kevin Durant is technically under contract for next season. It's a player option, right, for $31.5
million. $31.5 million, yeah.
Yep. Do you think there would be any sense of, like, needing to offer Kevin Durant something beyond that if you were the Golden State Warriors, if he went out and, like, there was not the suitors that we expect there's still to be, even though he's going to miss a year? If you're the Golden State Warriors, would there be some sense of responsibility to offer something to him more long-term?
I would think so. I mean, just looking at what the contracts he signed the last 2 years here, where they, you know, I went through the numbers this morning, he saved the organization $72 million, you know, in luxury tax and salary. And they were able to retain Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala from 2 years ago. So I think a lot of it will be based on, does Golden State want to add some, I don't even know if Durant's camp would go for it, but it's some injury protection language in there that for games played or for minutes when he does return healthy, that would guarantee the back end of the contract here. But yeah, as I said, Yeah, there'll be a market. Maybe not the Lakers because they need a win now player, and we'll see what happens with the Clippers. But just talk with teams that he will get. There'll be a contract waiting for him, and we'll know more. I mean, in the next 3 weeks, he's got an opt out date of June 29th. If he opts out, there's a guarantee somewhere that he's got financial security coming towards him.
Yeah, I cannot imagine a franchise like the Knicks, who has been so moribund and who just, you know, made a sacrifice of moving a guy like Kristaps Porzingis off the books, and them not just saying this changes nothing for us. We're still in trying to win. We would still have a contract for them. And then, yeah, a bunch of other franchises as well that would never have a normal shot at getting a superstar like that. Why they wouldn't put that sort of money on the table. The following fallout of this, though, is that how the players are going to perceive it, because it does coincide with the finals where a player kind of is really justified in sitting out a season and not being pressured by an organization and not being pressured by a veteran group that really wanted him to play for one final run, and a Hall of Fame coach and a incredible, again, front office, fan base, all of these different things. Kawhi Leonard leaves. He plays the 9 games. He takes a lot of criticism. He shows up in Toronto. He only plays 60 games, and now he's relatively healthy, I would say, for a guy of his workload in the postseason. In the finals, and now it coincides with this Durant injury where he was pushed by an organization. Do you see this having a ripple effect with players around the league in terms of how they are going to want to, I guess, also consider having load managements of their own?
Yeah, I mean, I think how Toronto managed Kawhi this year, you know, 60-plus games, and the effect of him playing. And I don't think every player is the same, but yeah, I mean, I think the all-star, all-NBA type guys is that you look at how Toronto handled things, and that's something that a pattern that can that you can follow here, that limiting yourself minutes-wise keeps you fresh when you get to the postseason here. So I think there will be somewhat of a ripple effect, and we'll see how the league handles it, because I know that does irk them a little bit as far as players sitting out here. But I think a good lesson is here, and I know we get the public perception of, you know, the people are always the judge as far as how we judge people, is that, you know, these guys know their bodies. I mean, Kawhi Leonard knew his body as far as what he could handle in San Antonio and as far as what he needed to do as far as shutting it down. And I think it's wrong to the point where, you know, we have to criticize a player for sitting out a year because he is hurt. Or it is wrong that an organization thinks that because they are paying him $30 million and that he can play at 80%, that they need to roll him out during the regular season. I think you just need to trust these guys, you know, kind of going forward.
Yeah, who knew that you trust your athletes when they tell you, these high-performance athletes that are, you know, playing 80-plus regular season games and then a full slate in the postseason, where Durant, a guy who, you know, is giving you 40 minutes a night, might actually be telling you the truth when he says he's not ready to go. I was asking some people this yesterday, but I'm especially curious to get your thoughts on it as someone who has been in a front office before. The idea of how much copycatting happens in the NBA and how often other teams take the lead of other franchises and try to follow suit. And we've seen it with the Warriors before, and obviously very, very difficult to replicate. But it seems like there's maybe a model with the Raptors that is a little bit simpler. And yeah, it's not easy to get a Kawhi Leonard in per se, but do you think there is anything that the Raptors are doing right now that, if they do pull this off, if they win an NBA title, that all of a sudden executives around the league are going to be saying to themselves, you know what, maybe we should try to be exploiting this, which the Raptors did really well?
I think the model of a big three is outdated. I really do. I know Miami did it, and team, you know, certainly us in Brooklyn, we tried to do it and came out, you know, a big cost there. But I think what Toronto showed you is that if you have one great player, and they do in Kawhi, and then you fill that roster and everybody has somewhat of a role. And I think Pascal has certainly have an opportunity to be an all-star here. And then you have really good role players and who know their identity, with Van Vliet and Powell, and certainly veterans with Kyle and Ibaka and Gasol, that's good enough to go out and win a championship. And you can still have a good balance to your roster, where going three players top heavy and then basically filling out your bench with minimums, it sets you up for, you don't have a safety net when a player does get injured. I mean, look at, you guys saw game 3, I mean, that Golden State team was a shell of themselves without Clay and Durant, because they had a bunch of minimum guys, Quinn Cook and Jarepko, and coming off the bench there. So, yeah, I think there is a model there for what Toronto did this year, for how they've built their team in the last 3 or 4 years, that you don't have to go star searching. So if your team like the Lakers, who have, you know, a max slot at 32.5, maybe you go out and get three guys for that. Maybe you split it up and you invest in players instead of going out and spending $140 million on Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, no, you got to get guys that can shoot, though. I think that was maybe a miscalculation on the Lakers.
That helps.
Yeah,
yes.
It does.
Yeah, the toughness. Maybe not.
Yeah. They're going to tough their way right into the bucket. No, it doesn't work that way. Bobby, always appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this.
You're the best, man, always.
Thanks, guys. You got it. Talk to you.